It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Working the board, the host of the segment, What is Kobe Watching? We'll have that later on. Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
Very good.
And making, I think, was it your second public appearance since Fatherhood, Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done, well done. Our best to Gene and to Joel.
Thank you very much. They're doing very well.
They couldn't come in?
No, he was asleep for the first time in a long time, and we're milking it.
Very good. How's sleeping been throughout the night? Any bits and say, do you guys take turns?
Well, it's hard because you know the feeding.
Have no say in that.
Biologically, I'm incapable of providing. So
just thank you, Ben Stiller.
So I just sort of have to sit back and let my wife do that part. So as a result, I'm not getting much sleep, but whatever I'm getting, my wife is getting less than half of it.
Right. And by the way, don't feel bad. There's nothing any of us can do about it. I didn't. No. Well, of course, once I hit the pillow, I was out. I make no bones about that whatsoever, and nobody should. But I know you got back into the swing of things this past week with Secretariat, the truly moving picture stamp of approval film with Diane Lane, John Malkovich, James Cromwell, and a really big horse. Do you have that? Here's a sample, I think.
The story of Secretariat is the story of a horse and the people around him who were able to do things that no one thought was possible.
As far as underdog stories, that's maybe the best one of all.
You're about to see something that you ain't never seen before.
You're guaranteeing that this horse is going to win the Triple Crown.
It takes a lot out of a horse to run in one of the Triple Crown races.
Three races, three states, in just 5 weeks. Hasn't been done in 25 years.
Secretariat is moving like a tremendous machine.
This is unbelievable. No horse can take this pace.
He was like Michael Jordan of all race horses.
ESPN did the 100 Greatest Athletes, and Secretariat was ahead of Mickey Mantle.
That's how unbelievable his presence was.
Entering the final turn, Secretariat surging past Angleite.
It was as if God whispered in his ear, go, and he went.
E-mark.
And action.
You're going to see horse racing action as it's never been seen.
I wanted the audience to participate in these races. We wanted to feel the dirt in our faces. We wanted to feel the speed that the horses are moving.
Secretariat pulling away at blazing speed. Oh.
Secretariat did something that no one thought was even conceivable. So what this story gives us is a sense that there are capabilities in each of us that are beyond what we think we can have. And that life is about finding how far you can go, how fast you can run, and you never know until you try, until you run.
So, Christopher, you saw this. Is this Diane Lane's Equus? That would actually be really fun to watch.
With much, much less nudity.
Yeah, by the way, if you haven't seen Equus, go see it, but it's Peter Finch, not Diane Lane. Sorry to disappoint. some of you or all of you. Okay, this now this got the Truly Moving Pictures seal of approval. It's been what, 3 years, 4 years since Seabiscuit? Do we need another horse racing picture? I know a little bit of horse racing, so I know the awesomeness that is Secretariat. Didn't know it was owned by a lady, played by the visually stunning Diane Lane. What's your viewpoint on this?
Well, the comparison to Seabiscuit is kind of the obvious one, and you know, I like Seabiscuit a lot because they took the least obvious route in telling their story. You know, it was much more about these three men, the trainer, the rider, the owner, and their relationship. And about the time and the context of the 1930s, and what the horse meant to the society,
as opposed to will the horse win the big race?
Right. So they took they sort of took all left turns on that movie, and then Secretariat is sort of what if you'd made that sort of story, but taken all the right turns, the most obvious turns, and that, not to say that I still think it's a good movie, and I would certainly recommend it. But obviously, you know, in terms of one was a great movie, and then this movie is just a good movie. It's an enjoyable family film. I think the movie it actually most resembles is The Rookie, another Disney
Dennis
film.
Quaid instead of a horse.
It was written by the same screenwriter. I think Mark Rich is his name. Mark or Mike Rich.
Right.
And it's directed by Randall Wallace.
Who wrote Braveheart. He directed We Were Soldiers.
Right. And so they really kind of just go all out for that straight Disney heartwarming story where, you know, you have conflicts between some of the characters, but eventually they're all going to be hugging it out and be nice to each other. And even the John Malkovich character as the crazy off-kilter trainer.
No.
By the end, you know, he and the acerbic secretary, who named Secretariat, are all friendly and telling each other how wonderful they are.
Even James Cromwell, the giant foil.
He plays...
not aluminum foil, just...
He plays Ogden Phipps, is that the right name?
I think so.
The richest man in America at the time, who literally, you know, had a coin toss to take Secretariat and chose the other horse, the other colt.
Right.
Of course, you know, I mean, I think the choice was actually made before they were born, so he didn't actually know for sure what he had on his hands.
Sure.
Wonderful supporting performances throughout this. And like I say, just a very good, but very, I think the way I wrote the review is I said it fits together with pre-manufactured precision. It's a little too slick for its own good.
Okay. And Diane Lane's solid?
Diane Lane's solid. You know, again, she has to deliver some dialogue that you're just sort of like,
You're forced to because you're the lead.
You know, there's one thing where, you know, the big conflict of the movie, and it is, you know, it's absolutely true, is that her father, who owned the horse farm, died, and they had to pay $6 million in estate taxes, and they didn't have it. And so she sold the breeding rights to this horse with, you know, for millions of dollars, with the proviso that if he lost any of the three legs of the Triple Crown, that they could take their money back. So she literally bet the farm on this horse.
And I also hear there's a lot of reaction shots of the horse playing the horse. Right? Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is again.
Is this up against the bear performance in The Edge?
Well, this is actually based on true history. You know, it's based in the book by a sports writer, Bill Knack, I believe is his name, who's actually played in the movie by Kevin Connolly. And it's something that they said about Secretariat at the time is that he really seemed to have sort of a hammy, showboating attitude where what people say, it seemed like he posed for photographs. Like literally, you know, the groom would be holding him and someone would come up with a camera and you would see the horse turn into the frame so they get a really nice profile shot. So yes, those shots are in there, but it's actually something that's commented on that, you know, people acknowledge of like, is that horse posing? Is he showing off?
And the race footage?
The race footage is really good. Probably not as good as Secretariat, but again, you know,
Seabiscuit. You mean?
Thank you. Yeah. You're watching a movie in which you know that he wins all the races.
You should, and won by an incredible margin.
Yeah, particularly the Belmont. I too know a little bit about horse racing in that I spent about 10 years in Ocala, Florida, which most people don't know is actually below south of Kentucky is the sort of
that's
the crown jewel
major
of
horse country
thoroughbred horse racing. Then there's Silver Charm, who won. One or two, I think he won the Derby and maybe the second one about 12 or so years ago. He goes from there. I would literally drive to work, and sometimes you would see Silver Charm exercising out in his yard next to the road.
with a picture of Secretariat as inspiration, and 8x10 on the fence.
Yeah, and so I would say the all the racing stuff is really in there. You know, they didn't quite center on the character of the jockey as much as I would have liked. You know, he sort of shows up and, you know, says a couple of things, and I want to win. And
well, he's only 4'5". Kidding, Tio's. There's a 5'5 person saying that. That's all right. So, and if you get a chance, I don't know if they're available on YouTube, because, you know, a lot of our information here at Film Sociology and a lot of our audio is courtesy of YouTube. But if you see the actual races that
oh, yeah.
Secretariat hit, it's a something to see.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with the Belmont, I believe Belmont's the last leg, right? Or is
yeah.
it Preakness?
I think it is. But
Derby, Preakness, then Belmont.
32 lengths.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, the Belmont is considerably longer than the other two, and that's why we've had, in the modern era, so many horses win the first two legs and then don't win the last one, because the Belmont is so much longer that you really need a horse with endurance. And it's kind of the big yin and yang of thoroughbred horse breeding is, you know, endurance versus speed, and you've got all these speedsters who don't have the legs for
right.
a long race. And that's what everyone said about Secretariat. They're like, oh, no, Secretariat is super, super fast. But what was the name? Sham was the big horse that he was up against, who was
mm-hmm.
Supposed to be a long race horse. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I got it. It's okay. Move on.
But yeah, 31 one length.
31, 32.
And
yeah.
they had this, I believe it's that, you know, set record times for all three races, and I believe two of the three records still stand.
So that's over 30 years.
Yeah.
Way to go. So, Kobe, I guess we got a good response over there for Christopher about Secretariat.
Now that was a good movie.
There you go. Okay, also opening in theaters, while you saw that, I went to see Never Let Me Go, the new English film with Keira Knightley, Carey Mulligan, and Andrew Garfield. And why do we know Andrew Garfield? Because last week he was the money source in The Social Network.
Oh, I thought you were saying because he's the next Spider-Man.
Is he?
Yeah. Didn't you know that?
I don't care. No, I shouldn't say. Have they started filming?
I think they may have.
Finished filming?
No.
Then I don't care.
They might be just in pre-production.
You could break a leg between now and whatever.
Boy, that is a really, really skinny elfin cast, isn't it?
Wow.
It looks like you plucked some elves out of the Lord of the Rings and said, "Let me make a movie."
But they're taller than the elves.
No, I don't think they're taller than the elves.
Maybe the same weight as the elves, but
they have very fine features, and they don't do things like
eat
food.
All right, yes, and it's based on a novel about set in an English boarding school, and we see them as kids as they meet, and then there's an interesting triangle as they grow up, and they grow up some more. Do we have the trailer there?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, share it with them.
My name is Kathy H. I'm 28 years old. I now spend most of my time not looking forwards, but looking back and what happened to us at Hailsham.
Catch it, Tommy!
Why didn't Tommy get the ball?
There was once a boy who had ran off beyond the boundary. They found him in the woods, with his hands and feet cut off.
Who told you these stories?
Everybody knows them.
And how do you know they're true?
You make up stories as horrible as that.
Students of Hailsham are special. Keeping yourselves well, keeping yourselves healthy inside, is of paramount importance.
None of you will do anything except live the life that has already been set up for you. And sometime around your third donation, your short life will be complete. That's what you're created to do.
We were moved from Hailsham at 18. Tommy, Ruth and I.
Exactly how much experience have you guys had with the outside?
Quite a lot.
We haven't.
Drinks?
5 cokes, please. If there was a boy and a girl, and they were properly in love and they could prove it, then they would be given a few years together before they began their donations.
Why do you do that thing, squeezing Tommy's shoulder? I'm allowed to touch Tommy, aren't I? It's the way you're touching him.
Suppose for a second that there is a special arrangement for Hailsham students if they're in love.
Although Tommy really likes you as a friend, he just doesn't see you that way. We are modelled on trash.
We're in love. It's true love. It's verifiable.
We didn't have to look into your souls. We had to see if you had souls at all.
wish I could help you. You poor creatures. Maybe none of us really understand what we've lived through, or feel we've had enough time.
Well, Chris, you made snarky remarks over the cast of that particular picture, and it's going to come back to haunt. Not really, no, but I'll say this. I knew nothing about the film going in. I know it's based on a pretty popular novel, and what they don't tell you is it, you know, from listening to it, it does kind of have this masterpiece theater sound of English boarding schools and relationships, and Charlotte Rampling is the head of the school. By the way, Mr. Slagle, that's a Google search right there. It's a sign of aging when you see Charlotte Rampling old. I mean, she was. Of course, there's the great exception to the rule. Everybody talks about Helen Mirren. Nobody talks about Charlotte Rampling in Swimming Pool.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Or actually, a Heartland movie that I watched yesterday was I can never pronounce her last name. Is it Greta Scacchi?
Greta Scacchi, I think. Yeah, she's gotten older too.
She's in a Heartland movie playing like the dumb, frowdy old school teacher.
That's not fair. Yeah, that's really real. Go watch. You know what scene I'm talking about in Presumed Innocent? That's so not fair. Later, Kobe, we'll talk about it. Anyway, so what's interesting is, it's set in the late 70s in this English boarding school, which looks a lot like the 40s. And then it jumps up to 1985, still looks like the 40s. And then it jumps to 1995, still looks like the 40s. However, the angle that is not brought up, and I don't think I'm really giving away anything in this, is that there is an angle in which students who are a part of this boarding school are part of a program where they have to donate 3 organs. And the question is whether they survive or not. So your cast that you just made fun of gets even lighter as the movie goes on because
wow.
They're donating their organs.
So is this supposed to be like a parable here or something?
Something like that. But what's interesting is that I'm watching this, and especially in the second half of the film where donating your organs becomes a part of the plot, is I thought this almost has a Logan's Run, kind of 70s, except thank God instead of putting it with really bad 70s futuristic clothing, because back then it was, you know, white jumpsuits and shoulder pads, that equaled the future. But this one is, they kept it in this kind of 40s, 50s English look. And that was intriguing. I mean, you could have easily made this into almost like a parody of the sci-fi futuristic movies. This could have been like a Logan's Run or Soylent Green as far as look, but fortunately they went the other way and made it look like this kind of modern day Dickensian masterpiece theater. And I was all right with that. I was all right with this. This is a film, and we've all gone through this. And I'm, you know, even as we're supposed to have, you know, thoughts of steel because we're film critics, but the first half of the film, it's a slow paced film. It's I don't think it's slow. And you're talking to a person that liked The American. I didn't think that was slow either.
I like American too.
Yeah. So the pacing of the film is probably going to throw some people off. And Friday's my busy day. Friday's my long day because I'm on AM and then I'm winding up here. So there was a couple of moments early on where I thought I was dozing off, and I don't think it was the film's fault.
Yeah.
But I think that comes into play. It's like when you go see a play on Friday night. Well, the Friday night crowd is going to be a little more tired than the Saturday crowd. And I think this is a film that, for me, suffers from that. But I think if you got to be sort of rested to get ready for this.
Yeah, well, obviously I've not seen it, but the reviews I've read have just been absolutely all over. I mean, I've seen absolutely heavenly reviews. People just completely in love with this movie. And I've seen some very negative reviews, almost nasty.
Not heavenly, not nasty. Somewhere in between. But I appreciate the film for taking what on paper could have been something really schlocky and keeping it as some of the British dignity to it. Also want to note, because Andrew Garfield, who was in The Social Network last week, and he's in this one, and apparently is Spider-Man, we'll wait. Let me know when a poster or a trailer shows up. But, you know, the solid performances from Carey Mulligan, who apparently got the big bucks for Wall Street and then is doing this. And, you know, Keira Knightley's fine. But also Sally Hawkins has a brief role as a teacher who kind of lets the students know, and she's fired for it, about things are going to change as you get older. And, of course, Sally Hawkins was best known for, she was in Cassandra's Dream and really wonderful in the Mike Leigh film Happy-Go-Lucky.
So do the kids get to pick which three organs, or
no.
Do they tell them which three organs?
They are told.
So what, you know, so if it's like a heart, well,
you're done.
You're done.
Yeah, but it's a requirement that they have to lose three organs. So
I'm trying to think, if they're going to take a heart, they know that the kid's not going to survive, so why aren't they taking everything? Or do they still limit themselves?
I think that's
three?
A limit thing. I mean, this could have easily been, you know, three British kids on the run, and it's not that. It's just a kind of a weird social acceptance. But then again, you know, a lot of these films that I say before are the Masterpiece Theater. It's about class, and you do the proper thing. So overall, yeah, I don't think it was glorious. Maybe I should watch it a second time on a Saturday when I've had some, you know, time to relax, but I don't know. But check it out, and you know, despite their weight, Chris, and give it a shot. So this
now
is
that was a good movie.
There you go. Okay. Also opening in theaters, Life Isn't We Know It. Let's move on.
I do have one brief thing to say about that. In that, obviously, from my own personal life, but this movie also inspired us to do a podcast on the Film Yap about baby movies.
Ah, and how baby, and yeah, as somebody who has a child, yes, babies either make your life miserable and then they make your life better,
or they
the other way around.
Or they talk and they're secretly super spies.
Oh, yeah, that too. I don't think they're this one, but yeah, by the way, this stars Katherine Heigl, which means, you know, 3 months from now she's going to say it was an awful experience and she hated everybody involved. There. And remember, you're not complete unless you have a child.
Oh.
No, see, don't fall into that trap. Don't fall for the type.
But go listen to our podcast, if I may.
Please do.
And you can listen to me explain why the movie Willow is a baby movie, but Rosemary's Baby is not.
Okay. So good teaser. I like that. Okay, also opening today, it's kind of a funny story, another comedy involving a mental institution, but apparently is comedic, and it's a dramedy.
I haven't heard too much about that one. Isn't that Zach Galifianakis?
Yes, apparently he has been told to act in this one, and it's a more understated performance compared to his previous work. You'll hear a review of that right after this show on Fresh Air, which you can hear on HD1 and HD2.
Is that David Edelstein?
It is David Edelstein.
He's good.
He is good. Not bad. Not bad. You know, I'll get him on the show someday. Because, you know, you really haven't really had your juice unless you've been on Film Sociology.
That's what we say around here.
Juice?
Oh.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say that.
Oh.
Well, no, we can. It's like shout out. We're not going to get into that. also opening a theater. Oh, because it's October. My Soul to Take, the new film from Wes Craven, and it's in 3D.
Yes, they did not officially screen that, but we've actually, one of our junior yappers went out and caught a midnight show last night, so we've actually got a review of that up on the Film Yap.
Okay, very good. Strange Things, Children of Haiti, which is a documentary here in town. William Kendridge, Anything is Possible, another documentary. And speaking of documentaries, The Tillman Story,
yeah,
where the government dropped the ball big time.
Well, I'm not sure so much as they dropped the ball as they took
or
the
military.
Ball. They took the ball, they camouflaged the ball, and then they hid the ball.
And then they said it was a hero.
And then they said, and they brought out a different ball and said,
here's
the actual ball.
So, yeah, that's all opening today. And, of course, next, because it's in one theater, I'm surprised it's in one theater, and it's not what we expect in the usual place, the Ryan Reynolds in a box film, Buried.
Yeah, you know, one of these real-time movies where I believe he's supposed to be a truck driver in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yes, and he's buried in a box with a cell phone and a lighter, and there's nothing he can do at stake in this film like they did in the film Waiting.
I do admit, I tend to like those sort of real-time movies. I did a reeling backward column not too long ago about The Setup.
Yeah.
With Robert Wise, one of the early movies to do that. Did it before High Noon, which is most famous for it.
And what we mean, Kobe, is set in real time. So what takes place. I love The Setup.
Yeah.
That's a great,
great,
great
looking
film.
Movie.
Yeah, that's for that time, it's like, what, late 40s? Mid to late
49
40s?
49 or 50. It's somewhere
but there's
in there.
And Robert Wise, of course, of the State of Indiana fame. But yeah, some nice camera work in that for what on paper sounds like a B movie, And Robert Ryan's solid in that. So,
there are
those. So we're going to take, and then, of course, next week, Heartland Film Festival. Well, I'm sure you'll have a preview on Film Yap, but we'll hopefully have some people on Film Sociology.
Yes, we're diligently reviewing as many movies as we can.
Cool. So we're going to take a short break and talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, including a slew of old titles and something that just still makes my skin crawl. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe Slagle, if you're done looking at pictures of Helen Mirren and Charlotte Rampling, we have a show to do. Christopher Lloyd is of the Film Yap is sitting in with me. You know, those two, they're probably the same age, and both were very, very beautiful women in their younger days and are really beautiful women and very confident in their older days. But, you know, Helen's got the Oscar, and she's, you know, shooting people in, with Bruce Willis starting up next week. I think Charlotte Rampling has done more of the Masterpiece Theater slant. And it's probably living in England, doing more stuff in England than she is here in the United States.
What's the other one? Julie. She was in
Julie Christie. Julie Christie.
Yeah, it's interesting where they each arrived in their career because they're kind of contemporaries. They kind of, you know, had very big careers in the 60s and 70s and all kind of cooled. But then obviously Helen Mirren's, I mean, they're all still working and still doing fine work.
Oh, yeah.
But Helen Mirren has sort of just ridden this wave where she is the grand madam of British cinema.
And with an Oscar, but, you know, not afraid to wear a bikini at her age in public. And, yeah, you can look at that after the show.
She should not be. You know, it's actually...
Oh, no, it's...
I was at a screening a couple nights ago for with ran to our colleague Gina Wagner from HauntedFlowersReviews.com.
Yes.
And she was asking me, are you the one that's in love with Helen Mirren? I was like, I thought maybe that was Matthew. I couldn't remember who it was.
Why, am I going to get flack now? Or?
But she was like, so you're talking about like when she was younger. I'm like, oh, no, right now. She is a fine, fine, terrific actress, but if I may be a man.
A pig. Go ahead.
She is a fine-looking woman
right now. Yes, she is. I'm telling you. So, because anybody can look good when they're 24.
Yeah.
Call me when you're 60, 65. I'm sorry. Even Sophia Loren. If you have the looks and the confidence, why not? So, you know, this is why I try to. You know, I hope to have an action film when I'm 80 with a co-star half my age or fourth of my age.
Another one, not British, Sigourney Weaver.
She's not nearly as old as them, but still,
Sigourney Weaver's early 60s. She's about.
She's in her early 60s.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good. So, Kobe, you have a lot to work on. But, Yeah, and of course there, I had. All right, if we're gonna really put the show off the rails, but I remember. No, I remember like the year Helen Mirren won for The Queen when she won Best Actress. She told, I think, a British press that she didn't wear knickers to the Academy Awards. Guys, I'm serious. There's a reason why Jack Black and Will Ferrell sang about her that year at the everybody. Yeah. That was that year's Academy Awards were let's all hit on Helen Mirren, and then go rent Excalibur and Oh Lucky Man.
Okay. This will become known as the sexist pig edition of film sociology.
When isn't it known as the sexist pig edition of film sociology? When there's a lady here. Okay, and even they know. All right, new on DVD and Blu-ray this week is The Karate Kid, the second of... well, there was actually more. There was two. I was thinking of A-Team, but there's apparently a lot of people our age feel like their childhood is getting violated in all sorts of nasty ways because they've remade films like The A-Team, Nightmare on Elm Street, which is also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, and now The Karate Kid. And honestly, I saw The Karate Kid in 1976 with the same director when it was called Rocky, so I really wasn't all that jacked up about it when I was 14, except for Pat Morita, who was really cool, got a nomination, deserved it, but I didn't think it's the be-all, end-all fight films.
It's one of those movies that is more fondly remembered than it perhaps deserves to be, but it's still a good, solid movie. You're right, it's absolutely derivative. But you're right, the whole Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita character, because, I mean, that in 1984,
'84,
that was very new.
What's Arnold from Happy Days doing with this guy? And then...
But seriously, to have a Japanese character as one of the two main characters in a mainstream Hollywood movie, that was kind of a new thing for 1984, and to not have them be in a stereotypical way.
Do you think Mako and Toshiro Mifune were ticked off because they didn't get those? Then again, actually, Mako got a nomination for the Sand Pebbles back in the 60s.
Yeah. But... I did not object to the remake. It was one of those things that they did it well. They hit all the right notes I really did not find my childhood suffering from having seen it.
Do we have audio of that, Kobe?
Yes, we do.
Let's hear it.
I feel like we're on a quest to start a new life. Go ahead.
Ask him, what's your name in Chinese?
Dude, I'm from Detroit.
Welcome to Beijing.
You gonna do something? I just wanna go home.
This is home.
I thought you were just a maintenance man.
The only way to stop them is to face them. I will teach you real kung fu.
Hang up your jacket.
Take it down.
Put it on. Take it off.
I already did.
Jacket off.
Kung fu. You've seen how we put on the jacket.
Be strong. Take off the jacket.
And live in how we treat people. Everything is kung fu.
Get off! Connect to the energy around you.
I get it. You're Yoda and I'm like a Jedi.
Your focus needs more focus. Strike harder! Harder!
I don't want to be scared anymore.
Life will knock us down. But we can choose to get back up. Remember, always strong.
That's nasty.
Okay, so you got to see this. It wasn't because I didn't not see this because my childhood was because I didn't think it was all that great. So what was your overall view of the remake?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, the young character, what's his name?
Jaden Smith. Oh, by the way, this film was produced by his parents. You would, too, if you had the chance.
Yes, and in keeping with the Will Smith tradition of not working with named directors, they went off and found some guy nobody's ever heard of to direct this.
Not the guy who directed Pursuit of Happiness or 7 Pounds. That would have been cool.
Pursuit of Happiness with some Italian guy.
Yeah.
And this, again, I'm curious as to why that is. But it's still well-made stuff. You know, they kept the bones of what everyone liked about the first movie, but recast it. I mean, you know, Ralph Macchio, I think, was playing 17. I think he was actually 37 when they made the first movie.
I don't think he was that old, but yeah, you're right.
He was up there. You know, and the character is supposed to be 12, and actually, Jaden Smith was actually younger. I think he was only 11, maybe even 10 when they shot this.
Wow.
So he is a really small kid.
And it's in Shanghai or China?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember if it's in Beijing or I think it's in Beijing.
So you got the visual aspect.
Yeah, and you got the issue of the culture. You know, so now he's being put into this culture where he's the unfamiliar one, not just the new kid in town, but the kid who doesn't speak the language. Although they're helped by every single person that they run into in China speaks perfect English. Including the announcer at the Kung Fu competition at the end, who announces the competition in English.
Really?
Very nice.
Fascinating.
And of course, you know the whole thing about Kung Fu, that this is Kung Fu in the movie. At one point, the Jaden Smith character even corrects his mother when she calls it karate. And this movie, everywhere in the world except for America, was titled The Kung Fu Kid.
That's right, folks. You got suckered in.
It's good stuff. I will say the video edition of this is really actually quite good. Lots of good extras. They have a thing where like they go out and show you all the historical places where they shot the movie.
I like those.
Lots of deleted scenes, and including an alternate ending where Jackie Chan dukes it out with the opposing sensei,
which would have been the beginning of the Karate Kid Part 2.
Yeah, and it's actually a really good fight. So I tell people, you know, it's even if you don't care at all about it, it's worth the rental just so you can catch that stuff.
And this film was 220? Was this 2 hours and 20 minutes long?
Yeah, it's a longer movie, and you do not feel it going by at all.
And Jackie Chan, I called it stunt casting, because the fact that, you know, Pat Morita, his character is such a surprise because, as I said before, you're like, oh, that's the dude from Happy Days. And then he shows you some moves, which is pretty cool. And he had the great drunk performance, the scene that probably got him the nomination, among other things. But the fact is, I'm like, I know this guy can teach kung fu because I've seen his work for the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's a bit of stunt casting. And Jackie Chan does an interesting thing, is he really kind of plays it close to vest and plays it. Like for instance, you know, Jackie Chan in some of his early roles in American mainstream films, you know, his English was still, but he's gotten much better. And he, I think, intentionally kind of dials it back and speaks with a much heavier accent in English in this.
Okay.
Intentionally, to just sort of make the character just a little more remote, and you have to kind of warm up to him a little bit. I would like to talk about something about cinematic bullies, though.
Now, are the bullies dressed up like skeletons chasing the kid through the costume party?
No, although that was a great scene. Everyone remembers that from the first movie.
I remember Elizabeth Shue from that movie, but that's a whole other thing. Go on, cinematic bullying.
Not just with the Karate Kid, but, I mean, virtually every cinematic depiction, or at least mainstream depiction of a thing, is... Like Karate Kid, you know, the big blonde kid spends 2 hours bullying Ralph Macchio, and then Ralph Macchio kicks his butt at the end, and the last line, he literally, the bully, goes and grabs the award away from the guy so he can give it to Ralph Macchio himself, and he says, you're all right. What was his character's name?
LaRusso, Daniel LaRusso.
He's like, you're all right, LaRusso.
Okay, here's the question, I guess. I'm sorry, I'm stopping. Has anybody had that experience?
No. Here's what actually happens in real life. Kids who bully do it because they like to do it. They get off on the power of doing it.
Right.
And, you know, they are not generally stupid. They pick their subjects to bully well.
Yes.
And as someone who was bullied in school, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have been, you know, that whole idea of standing up, it just doesn't work. Here's what actually happens if you actually stand up to a bully. One of two things happen. Either you get your tushy handed to you on a platter.
Thank you for the word choice.
Or, and this is more commonly what happens, is the bully stops bullying you and goes finds some other kid to bully. So all you've done is just displace your suffering onto some other kid.
Or they do it on Facebook.
Or they do it on Facebook.
So, yeah, way to go out there. Well, so I guess you go for the fight, not for the commentary.
Yeah.
Not for the social message.
What can I say? Or just hide a brick in your pants and use it when appropriate.
Ow. Okay. Do we have a reaction for that? I don't know.
Now that was
a
good movie.
Also opening on DVD and Blu-ray this week, because it's October and it fits, and it's the latest from the Dark House production of Warner Brothers, is Splice.
Yes.
A film starring, I have to say it, Academy Award winner Adrian Brody and Academy Award nominee Sarah Polley. She did the screenplay for Away From Her. They play a married couple who are also a couple of scientists that have, well, found a way of splicing DNA and creating something that's almost human. And almost human. Play it.
Here he comes.
Careful.
All clear.
That's it.
Heart rate stable.
If we don't use human DNA now, someone else will.
Regulators and politicians, they tear us to pieces.
We can go to jail for this.
Human cloning is illegal. This won't be human. Not entirely. It's coming out.
It's not due for months.
Slippery. What was that?
A mistake.
Tempting. Clyde?
What happened?
It's alive. Stop! You'll get him.
Get out of there. I'm gonna gas.
Wait.
In 3, 2, 1.
I said don't.
Help him. It's dangerous.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
Nobody can see what we made.
Aging fast. Days within a matter of minutes.
What are we supposed to do? Lock her away from the world?
We change the rules. Cross the line.
What's the worst that could happen?
Now, I remember when we saw this film, when it came out in the spring.
I remember the screening distinctly.
I do as well. I've said many times that crowd reaction really doesn't do a whole hell of a lot for me when it comes to film. I know my opinion, regardless of what the majority of the audience thinks, or if whether I agree with it or not. But I will say there's a moment in this film. I kind of have been thinking about this film for the last couple of months. I remember we talked about it heavily as soon as it came out, and we hardly do this. I mean, we don't huddle up into a circle with our little black cauldron and talk, you know, do we heap praise or do we, you know, dismiss it or whatever. But there was just a couple of moments in this film in the last half. The best way I wound up describing it is if you remember the film It's Alive, only it's written by Tennessee Williams. Because it seems like what the film does is the first two-thirds of it is this whole, you know, can you make a human? Can you play God as a scientist? And the Brody and Polly characters, the couple, they wind up adopting this creature, this creation, and raise it like a child. And then it takes a really dark turn. And it's one of these, oh, my God, are they going there? Yes, they are. They're going further.
Yes.
So what happens is there's this whole kind of, and I remember somebody, nobody in our group, but I remember, I think in a write-up, somebody was even comparing it to Frankenstein when it comes to, you know, the relationship between creator and man. I don't remember Dr. Frankenstein or James Whale doing some unspeakable things with the Splice character. And what seems to be a two-thirds of a sort of a social commentary or scientific commentary, the last third becomes exploitation film. And I guess I wasn't ready for that shift. And you're talking to a guy that really liked From Dusk Till Dawn. But I felt like I needed a shower after watching this picture.
I agree with everything you said, except that, you know, I like the movie a lot more. Just because it was so willing to just go where you were like, no, they're not going to go there. Okay, I think they might be going there. They're not really gonna. Okay, they went there,
and it not only involves the Adrian Brody character, but the Sarah Polley character as well.
Yeah,
and what happens to her character that was really icky.
What I liked about it was that it surprised me, and you know, being a professional film critic, you see so many movies that it's like you have X-ray vision and you can see through and see the architecture and the mechanicals underneath. You know how these movies are constructed, and it's so easy to predict things. And you know, up until just a few minutes before this movie took its left turn, I did not see it coming at all. And I just love being kind of knocked off my socks and made uncomfortable.
Okay.
That was the thing I said about this movie in my review, was it made me extremely uncomfortable to watch this movie. But it was a delightful experience, not having everything laid out for me.
And the crowd. So I was alluding to it earlier, the crowd reaction to this. I mean, and then minutes after it happens, there's still. There would be a resurgence of tittering.
Yeah.
Of the, oh my God, we just saw that.
Yeah.
So
see, I would recommend this movie quite a bit. If you're any kind of a horror movie fan or science fiction fan, you've got to rent this. This movie died at the box office. I mean,
I was surprised that it did. Especially, I'm surprised the word of mouth on this didn't. I don't even remember what else opened that week.
It was in May, I believe. So I think it was opening against all the big May stuff. And
so maybe it's got a second chance since it is October and it's a scary movie. And I guess I'm saying it's not a bad movie. It's just an icky movie. And I just didn't. And you like the ickiness, and I did not.
It's delightfully icky.
So, and I thought it was just icky, so go ahead.
Turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off!
Yeah, that was... Yeah, boy. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, A Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake.
The Y remake?
I guess. Well, you know,
here's why, because they remade Halloween and it did well.
Everything.
So.
Well, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Friday the 13th, and you know, the reason why dogs lick their elbows, because they can. And you know, the only thing, and I didn't get a chance to see it because... Guess what? They didn't screen it for us. But the fact that Jackie Earle Haley, who's had a nice little resurgence in the last couple of years between his Oscar-nominated performance in Little Children, and he was able to kind of cash in on that by appearing, probably one of the best things about Watchmen, and he's the lead in this.
Yeah, I hate to say it, this the whole involvement of him in there just looks like a paycheck.
Probably.
I mean, I don't blame him. The guy was
as
far out of Hollywood as you could possibly be.
He got to be in a major picture like Watchmen. He got to work with Scorsese, and he got to be a lead in a remake of a horror movie. So
he got an Oscar nomination.
That's right. So there's that. Okay. Also, because it's October and we have scary movies that we're obliged to bring up because it's October, The Human Centipede.
Oh, I did not
talk about icky.
I did not see it.
Didn't see it either, but I've seen footage and
we have a review.
I heard about it and I don't want to see it.
You don't have to.
We have a review on the Film Me Up and also an interview with the directors.
Really?
Yeah, just very briefly, it's about people who take bodies and
a mad scientist who
stitch them together in such a way so that it looks like a centipede.
By the way, if you see the DVD section of The Onion, look, that's the jewelry. Yeah, there we go.
By the way, if I might give myself another plug. If you're in Noblesville, Carmel, Westfield, and get the current papers that are distributed up there, they carry my video column. I'm not sure if it's this week or next week. I have a best and worst Halloween videos to watch for Halloween, so check that out.
Okay, very good. And then Sunday, October 24th at Easley Winery, which is downtown, at 1 o'clock, I'll be hosting a wine. Well, we'll be drinking wine, but I'll be talking about scary movies, intentionally and unintentionally scary. And, of course, we have a Plaza Suite at Scottish Rite Cathedral that opens a week from tonight. So it's the, what the hell's today?
8th.
So the 15th, 16th, 22nd, and 23rd at Scottish Rite Cathedral. Okay, we've got a bunch of titles. I think we might even just plow through the break and... Forget the break. We're not going to do that. So, here's some titles that are on Blu-ray. Some of these I'd actually buy if there were extra items with them. I can't buy these all over again. But here's some titles on Blu-ray. Bad Lieutenant. The original Harvey Keitel, Show Me, Show Me, Show Me How You. The Abel Ferrara picture, great performance, really, really well made, uncomfortable NC-17 redemption film from Abel Ferrara.
Yeah, none of those icky to watch movies.
Yeah, but anyway, that's an icky that I actually enjoyed. So there's that. Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And didn't you when we had the thing at the Double I Double F at the Critics Forum, you brought up Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite animated films. I just think it's the bee's knees, and it's one of those movies that's just so many layers of depth to it. And you're like, oh, it's a kiddie cartoon, but
no, it's much more than that.
Yeah, lots there to watch, and yeah, that's one I don't care if you have kids or not, pull that one out.
Absolutely. So now it's on Blu-ray. Also on Blu-ray, the Blair Witch Project, which I think is brutally overrated, I should say. I think if you're telling me the scariest film ever made is being stuck in the woods with a bunch of whiny Gen Y filmmakers and a mission accomplished, but I don't think that's what they were going for.
Now, have I told you my Blu-ray story on the show here before?
The
Blair Witch story?
No, you had a chance.
Yes. So I knew all the Blair Witch people there in Orlando back in the late 90s, and they literally said, hey, we're going up to Maryland for the weekend. We're going to shoot this movie. We just need bodies to, like, fetch and tote stuff, and we'll give you credit and points on the movie because no one's getting paid. And I was too busy.
That's
so,
all right.
So, yes, I could have been, like, head gaffer on the Blair Witch Project and got
but then,
money.
Yeah, but then that probably meant you would also have to work on Book of Shadows, and you don't need that. We were talking earlier on DVD and Blu-ray, because it is October, The Exorcist, the original Exorcist with, Max von Sydow and Ellen Burstyn and Linda Blair and all of its pea soup and head spinning glory.
One of the all time scariest movies.
And I'm telling you, folks, and I remember showing this to friends in college, and I had to keep griping you damn kids and your ADD editing. You know, the first 45 minutes, once you get past the first 45 minutes, it's like The Room. You know, it takes some time to set up, but boy, it pays off. So that's also on Blu-ray. I just bought this. Yes, I bought this because I wanted this, and it's finally off my list of films that need to see the light of day. The original theatrical release of Grindhouse. I had so much fun watching this three-hour thing with a short film by Quentin Tarantino, a short film by Robert Rodriguez, and a load of trailers. One so far has been made into a movie, Machete, and apparently Thanksgiving will be made into a movie later on, thanks to Eli Roth.
Which one is that one? I can't remember.
Thanksgiving is the horror film, because there was a period in the late 70s where every holiday was a horror film. New Year's Day, New Year's Evil, April Fool's Day, Happy Birthday to Me, and there was Halloween.
Wasn't one of those other Grindhouse trailers like Werewolf Nazis
She-Wolf, or something? She-Wolf Devil... She-Wolf Devils of the SS, which was Rob Zombie directed that, and Edgar Wright of Shaun of the Dead did one called Don't, because there was a lot of films that had Don't in the title.
Reminds me of a German movie that came out earlier this year on video, Dead Snow.
Dead Snow, which apparently I've been told I need to see because it has zombies and Nazi zombies.
No, it's Nazi zombies. It's like all you need to know, Nazi zombies, I'm there.
There you go. So anyway, Grindhouse is finally out on DVD or Blu-ray. I'm really happy about that. Also on Blu-ray, and I remember the screening for this one is too, because we saw this before Aquila and the Bee. We had two screenings, Hard Candy.
Oh, I didn't.
You weren't there for that?
That was before I was in town.
Okay,
yeah.
This was, no, really? Yeah. Okay, this was the film that kind of put Ellen Page on the map, and it was kind of a reverse Extremities with her and Patrick Wilson. Not a date movie. don't take that home.
Unless you're breaking up after the movie.
Maybe. Also on Blu-ray, apparently a director's cut of Michael Mann's Last of the Mohicans, or as somebody once referred to it, My Left Moccasin. This was the film Daniel Day-Lewis did right after winning the Oscar for My Left Foot. The Mission... I would actually like to see that on Blu-ray.
I love The Mission.
Excellent. Gorgeous film. Solid performances by De Niro.
And the musical score by Ennio Morricone.
God's composer. We've talked about that.
One of the all-time great film scores.
Absolutely. That was one I actually charted. So, great score. Looks great. Roland Joffe, when he wasn't making a snuff film. No, he didn't make a snuff film. That thing with Elijah Cuthbert was bad. The RoboCop trilogy.
Okay.
It's all right.
Thanks for the first one. You can keep the other.
Right. Ronin, which I thought was already put out on DVD and Blu-ray already, but, you know, that's a great car chase scene. Secretary, if you're into watching Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Another icky to watch, but a good experience.
Actually, one of the better love stories that came out that year. Wonderland, Val Kilmer is John Holmes, sort of.
Didn't see that one.
And you talked earlier about a film that you will defend. You were saying off the air you would defend Far and Away.
Far and Away on Blu-ray?
Well, no. This is one I would defend. It's on finally on Blu-ray. The Thin Red Line.
Oh, yeah.
I want a five-hour talkie, beautiful jungle footage version of The Thin Red Line. I want that.
Yeah.
I actually do.
And I'm one of these people that argues against, you know, movies that are too short for their own good or shot like as if the people had ADD. But, yeah, I watched The Thin Red Line, and I was like, there's a great hour and 40-minute movie in the body of a three-hour movie.
Right, but I want more. Okay, also on DVD, Kobe, we've talked about this before. You are a big fan of the Steven Soderbergh Ocean's 11.
Yes.
The original with the Rat Pack is on they're re-releasing it. It's out. I own it, but apparently it's new packaging, so you can, you know, go look for that. And in the oh my goodness. So, if you're very generous, the DVD collection, the Humphrey Bogart Essential Collection, 24 films on 12 discs, including, the problem is I own almost all of these, so I don't really need this unless somebody wants to give it to me. Kid Galahad, Dark Victory, High Sierra, Roaring Twenties, San Quentin, Maltese Falcon, Across the Pacific, To Have and Have Not, Big Sleep, Dark Passage, which you talked about on your
this
site.
This week's Reeling Backward.
Yep. Key Largo, Casablanca, and Treasure of the Sierra Madre. That's a great collection.
Wow.
Recommend those films. Okay. We got a short one, so hit the intro.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Now, you had an overload in the last couple of weeks because, well, you know, half the Screen Actors Guild died last week. But you did pick up on two films. One, because of Jazz Fest, you finally watched Clint Eastwood's film Bird.
Yes.
And?
I liked it. Would you consider that slow or slow-paced?
I really dig the film, so I would say slow-paced.
Okay.
It's also kind of Charlie Parker 101.
Yeah.
Not an uplifting film. We all know how that film ends. We don't know how Charlie Parker ends, so. But really a film that put Forrest Whitaker on the map. Yeah. Prior to this, he had really good supporting spots in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Good Morning Vietnam, The Color of Money, and,
really put Clint Eastwood on the map as a serious director. This was the movie, a couple movies before Unforgiven.
Oh, yeah.
And people really started to say, hey, this guy isn't just a cowboy.
Yeah, and this was, you know, one of the few films that he's directed and did not appear in, because he directed a lot of the action films. But bully for him on that. I think that's a good starting point, and great music. Charlie Parker, fantastic musician. And because of the death of editor Sally Menke, you watched Jackie Brown.
Yes, I did.
And, I saw her first.
I love everything about Jackie Brown.
Excellent.
And that's like, what, 220, 240?
This is about 2.5 hours. I think I'm going to be the guy that says that's Tarantino's best film, at least his most mature. Robert Forster's rock solid. Everybody at De Niro, Bridget Fonda, Samuel L. Jackson. Pam Grier not only should have been nominated for that film, but should have won. Sorry, Helen Hunt. I just love the film that much. And a great adaptation of an Elmore Leonard novel. That was the novel Rum Punch. So, good. And now you have a love affair with Pam Grier.
Yes.
Take a number, kid. You know, because seriously, I've been thinking about her before you were even on this earth. And that's a story for another time, Chris. Give my best to your family. Filmyapp.com?
TheFilmYap.com.
So check that out. Heartland preview next week. Go to Heartland. Go see. Take a chance on some new films. And here's some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
On behalf of Kobe Slagle and Christopher Lloyd, I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Don't forget Plaza Suite next weekend and the weekend after at Scottish Rite Cathedral. I'll be at Easley Winery Sunday the 24th at 1 p.m. to discuss scary movies and have a big glass of wine. You're listening to WFYI HD to the Point. You can also hear this on WFYI.org, and it's also available as a podcast. I'm Matthew Soucy. See you later.